Good morning, everyone, and welcome to my talk about how we used Radiance as a baseline, so we compared it with, for interactive glare risk assessment. And I will be talking about some of the, our journey going and our challenges we had having our renderer adapt to some of the needs and such. So my name is Ömercan Yazıcı. I'm a third-year PhD student of the University of Saarland. And this presentation here is a small subset of a bigger project, which is in collaboration with the Deutsche Forschungsinstitut für Künstliche Intelligenz, DFKI, the Fraunhofer Institute for Solar Energy Systems, and the University of Saarland, where I'm from. And it is funded by the Velox Stiftung. So before getting further ado, let me outline first the presentation. First, I will present our motivation, why we are doing this. Then I want to very shortly talk a bit about our renderer and why it's different. Then the challenges you have, essentially, if you have a own renderer, if you compare it to another renderer, it's not that specific to any of these, like our or Radiant, but it's a very difficult task nevertheless. Then I will go towards our evaluation, and that might take a bit of space. And then some outlook. As I mentioned, this is still an ongoing process. We are not done yet, and I hope still it's interesting to some of you. So first, our motivation. We want interactive rendering. Why do we want that in the presence of glare? So we want to allow the user to change the viewpoint, like essentially walk around in an office space, change the line conditions, so set it to, I don't know, Christmas in 2017, and see how the weather conditions are. And then if you walk around, you want to get some feedback about the glare in this one particular viewpoint. And with that, you can, for example, calculate the DGP and so on. As I mentioned that, you want to just explore the scene, detect glare. This might be very useful, for example, for clients. If you want to, an architecture bureau where you want to, tell them why you have to use these one or two sheets, the blinds or whatever, where you can exactly show them how it's blinding you essentially. And then the one question is also, and I think that's obvious to most of you, why would we actually compare to Radiance? It's very basic. Radiance is very well evaluated. Might be the best evaluated renderer out there. And this is crucial because, as I mentioned, we want to use it for glare risk assessment, and having a correct baseline is crucial. And also, it's the de facto standard in glare evaluation. I'm no daylight expert, but I don't know any other tool where the core is not Radiance. So, our own renderer. Very first, we just dive into the Monte Carlo ray tracing, which is also a big part of Radiance itself. So we start with the camera, we just shoot a ray, and then we bounce around the scene. That's the most basic thing you can do, and then you hope you will bump into a sun or a light source or whatever. To make it a bit more reliable, we actually, in each of these intersections where we, for example, have a surface intersection, we actually directly connect towards the light sources. That's also done in Radiance. And with that, we enforce them to have like direct connections to the light. This is the most basic thing you can do in rendering, essentially, and it works like a charm for, let's say, 80% of the scenes. And that's also the most basic thing we do in our renderer as well. To show it for our renderer, we just have JIT compiling. This is very important to kind of get all these performance benefits we have out there, and then to adapt to the scene we use. For example, like office space, like this table here or whatever. Then we actually also have CPU and GPU support. GPU support is the crucial one to get an interactive or real-time rendering. We do have real-time capabilities, that's what this talk is about. But it's also crucial to still have offline capabilities just to let the renderer render and then stop whenever you want to stop. So, we also use that in an education. This is not the same audience as here. These were students, so they played around with it and had to do some seminar work with that. But it's a crucial, like, it's an important feedback for us. Let me dive into the interactive part of the renderer. Here we have a front end for the for our renderer. It's the IGView. Not the same as RView, but it's oriented on that. You have a feedback, like it's progressively rendered. If you change the viewpoint, it restarts and then renders and continues. If you wait for a point, it will get better and better and better. And then you have a lot of metrics you can get. So we also allow for some kind of interaction in the scene. Usually you could change the paint of the walls, for example, or the strength of the sun. This is still work in progress. You also have live denoising. I will not dive too much into denoising because in glare it's actually counterproductive. Denoising, what denoising does is you have a noisy input. It outputs a very clean output, which unfortunately is a lot of interpolation, and it gets rid of a lot of these peaks, which is crucial for glare, so we can't really use live denoising here. But it's a good thing if you do your the glare analysis and then put on top of it a denoising to give the user a fine, clear image afterwards. But do not use that for the actual analysis. We also have a live evil glare overlay, but unfortunately that is still a work in progress, and we do not use that for any of the evaluation coming up. So we use the standard tool from Jan Wienold for that. And one of the crucial things also, we have something similar to what RPIC does, and this is very important because the evaluation doesn't care about the activity, we care about the correctness of it. So we just have a command line tool without any of the UI. So ID trace, same thing as RTrace, but there is a caveat to that. On a GPU, you don't want to deal with a single ray. So RTrace works like a charm if you just have a ray and shoot into the scene and you get the output of that. If you use that for example with ID trace, you will get a lot of uptime, so it's not as performant as RTrace can do with like one single ray, but the more rays you have, the more performant a GPU implementation actually gets. So if you have 1,000 rays and you send them directly to ID trace, you get a faster result. And one cool thing I already saw, for example, in the Ladybug tools, is that the Python gets kind of integrated in all these tool chains, which helps a lot because you can play around with like for Jupyter and so on. And there are wrappers around Radiance for that. And we, in our tool set, we also directly integrated the Python support to the let me talk about a bit of the challenges we had while comparing to each other. First off, there is a question about when is enough. It is easy in Radiance, you just set the parameters and then it stops. But in a progressive renderer, it's actually not that easy because we usually have something like samples per pixel. It means how many samples per pixel we actually shoot into the scene. And then we actually require some way of a user feedback or some metric to say, hey, this is enough, this is converge, and then so it's not easy to get what Radiance does there and what we want to do there. And let me show you some. Does it work? No, it does not. But so in this video there, usually we just double up the samples per pixel, and then you see how much converged the image gets. And usually in Monte Carlo means that if you skirt the samples per pixel, you decrease the error by half. So we had a look at the RF files, for example, where you have the quality parameter, and wanted to kind of map the quality towards what we have in SPP, like samples per pixel. Unfortunately, it's not as straightforward as it sounds because changing the quality parameter also has some parameters set in the background. We struggled to find a good balance and a fair comparison to here. So what we actually came up with, and this is very important, we care about the correctness of the results. We do not really care about performance here, because comparing a GPU with a CPU is kind of unfair. The first one solution would be actually very simple. First, we render it with radiance. See how long it takes for radiance to render a particular scene at viewpoint. And then we render the same thing with our renderer for the same direction. This works to get a converged result, at least. And this means that instead of the sample per pixel, which became like a very variating, we use the time. And for that, we also added some line tools. Another thing, and for that, I actually need feedback from you guys, because I think you'll have more expertise on that. We had to do some parameter jungle to find out what the correct parameters are to get a correct or non-biased reference and very correct result from radiance. And what we came up with, and we changed it, we tested it, and this is the current status. It might change in the future, maybe from your feedback. So what we came up with is, first we just stick to pure Monte Carlo. We do not use any low discrepancy methods like Halton or Sobol or whatever. This is the same for our render and for radiance here. We disable all the ambient cache things. We and force them to sample all the highlights in the scene, like the images. We also follow all the shadow rays. We do not distinguish between any of the light types or their shadow rays. So shadow rays are actually the blue dotted lines I showed in the very early stage. This is like the connections towards the light sources to check if any contribution can happen between them. Then we also apply Russian LED. This is not particularly needed, but it kind of reduces reduces the render time. Just get faster. Then we have the high ambient diffusion factor. Very important is the AD 800. The LV is just a reciprocal of that 800. And we tried around. It's an empirical value. It might need some tweaking here and there, but this one worked out quite fine. Then we also enforce sharp reflections. This is just because our scenes, I will show later, just are fine with sharp reflections. And then we also just put up the indirect bounces to very high, just to be safe. You might not need that if you're in an open space or just have like a one window, which our scenes actually are. But we keep it on the safe side. The numbers of bounces is the same in our renderer and in radiance. Yes.
So, AD16 means that you'll stop well before that because each
I have Russian
does a good bounce. Well, maybe it won't because you're going to run out of.
So, what I understand is that using Russian roulette, so AD is for me at least is a max depth, and Russian roulette will take care of it. Like the effective bounces you have in a scene are very likely to be smaller than.
It'd be interesting to actually run our trace with the trace option, see how many rays go back. But go on.
Okay, I don't know. But yeah, so let me dive to the evaluation. There are two parts to that. One, which is very simple, and I can only encourage for everyone doing some kind of rendering or whatever to actually do that as well. And it is unit tests. Radiance has them as well, it has two. And we did that too. We generated the reference with radiance, and then we just tried to render that with our render. That's the basic approach you do there. And you only test specific components, specific light types, specific material shapes, and so on. And then you get the results. And an advantage for that is, and I think really it's easy to find some local mistakes here. Because if your, UVRDT func is wrong, you just have it in this test suite, you can play it around in this one test, and then you just fix it. This advantage is that there is no real interaction between components, like if you have a Paris sky model and then you have a different material in the wall and then you see what happens between them. Usually there is no real interaction, or at least it's well defined, but it's still something you have to look up for. So a full regression test, which will, like if you render a full scene, is still needed. Another disadvantage is that's from the computer science standpoint is you don't know the whole scale of your parameters usually, and you only can find some of the critical points. But this is open research in computer science and theoretical computer science. It's named, I don't know what kind of problem that is, but it's unsolved and might be unsolved. Yeah. So one particular example here is the VR-Fitting Fund. Both our implementations, Ignis and Radiance here, and I will keep the color scheme for the rest of the presentation. What you can see here is they look very similar, and please don't look at the edges here. They can be easily solved with a p-filter, but we know that, you know how we solve it, so we keep it for performance reasons. And I'm very likely to change that after I'm done with the presentation to make it more like a reference image, but that's not the problem here. So we have both outputs, what we usually, let me tell about this. It's just two planes perpendicular to each other. There is no plane behind it, it's just a reflection. The lower material is just a pure Lambertian with 80%, and the material in the backside is actually the VR-Fitting Fund. We don't make use of the transmission, at least not in this example. In the actual test suite, in our test suite, there are we do tests. And if you go further, we can just do an absolute error difference here. You can see there are differences, obviously, just because also of numerical nature and the stochastic nature. But overall, it's quite low. We have some points on the point line, which is in front of the reflection. Not due to the VR Fitting Fund, it's more like about how we handle the so-called delta lights, like the point lights here, which is mathematically just integrated over there, and we have delta connection and so on. But that's a hard difference there, but overall it's still very close to each other. And we consider this a success. Obviously we need to have some kind of epsilon, so some kind of threshold where we say this is good enough, and if you well document that, I hope it's. A different example here is the Perisky model. They look similar, but actually they're not similar at all. So we have this image here, the absolute error, and you see one of these crazy patterns. I really like these patterns, but they are just numerical difference. But what a numerical difference is not is the highlights you have there, like here and here, like where it's brighter. This particular example just shows I did something wrong. I have to fix it. It is some kind of flip here and some science flip and so on. But just as an example, how easy it is to detect that our convention of our renderer does not match up all the time with what Radiance does. So overall, I showed them absolute error before, but actually you should use the squared error. But the absolute error is just easier to visualize. Also, you still need higher quality references. I mentioned maybe use the p-fold here to get rid of the aliasing effect, but you know what they are, it's fine. And that's also the reason why we didn't do a comparison per pixel. Not just because of the aliasing, the overall pixel handling is vastly different between our renderer and the Radiance. And I really hope we could do a per pixel test. It's just not feasible to do so. So we are talking about glare. So we are interested in the glare side of things. It's why we also do some DGP evaluation. In this evaluation, we actually render the scene with the same parameters I showed before in Radiance, compute the DGP value with the Evo glare tool, and do the same with our tool, but as our tool is a progressive renderer, we just extract all the images in between and see where exactly do we match. Do we actually converge to the same DGP value? Because that's what we want in the end. So for this, it's clear. So the yellowish line there is radiance, which in our case is 79 seconds. And it just puts out a DGP of 0.223. tree or something. And so what we did now is we rendered with our render and looked when it actually converged. And this is actually, at least for me, quite surprising, because first I thought Evil Glare would be a bit more like sensitive to the noise we actually have in all these images. And in the early stages, it is very sensitive to that. And but as you might have seen in the previous, like in the video which didn't play, unfortunately, the first sample is just dots of light and black. So it's very noisy. But it converges to the correct result. And around like 32 samples per pixel, which is around like a second, a bit more than a second, we get close to the actual value radiance in the Evil Glare tool output. And then this scene, which might be familiar to some of you, this is the front of Tageslichtlabor on the roof, which we also conducted some experiments about, like where we measured actually real things, but this is not about it, this is a digital version of that. And here we did the same approach. We just used radiance to see where it goes, and then picked, like you see that we do converge to that. Well, it's slightly lower, I have to still find why exactly that's the case. But one insight of that is, yes, the especially Evil Glare tool is not that sensitive to noise, but one particular thing is very important. If you can't find the glare, like the peaks, if there are no peaks at all in the scene, and we have a stochastic approach here, so we can connect to the sun quite easily, but imagine if you're inside a room which you need, like, there is a door and the door is go through that, and if you never find that path, you will never get the correct glare, what, for example, Radiance does with his ambient cache computation and so on. So just noise is fine, but if you don't detect the glare or the peaks, nothing we can do. Let me go a bit of an outlook, especially about these peaks. For that, to make it more feasible to use it in more complex scenes, we need something like peak extraction. There are approaches like ABSDF, for example. Our handling of peaks is quite forced. We have some of these stuff like ABSDF, but it's still way more brute force than what Radiance does. We have to make it smaller. I think that's something even Radiance will benefit from. And especially this part where we use the BSDF representation itself to get the peaks into a more, like, into the representation to use these peaks to make it better overall for glare risk. And there's also some things from the computer graphics community, like path guiding, which does not directly help you with the peaks itself, like something from like where you have a window and you want to go through the window, but it still helps you a lot for everything before that. And this is path guiding, for example, is something, it's not neural. There is neural versions of that, but in overall it's just a training scheme on the fly while rendering to detect where actually the rays have to go for to make the whole rendering, for example, more efficient. And that's a cool thing to add. Then also performance. You saw we still want real-time. The results I showed one, not really real-time. That's why I call it interactive. And everything less than 2 seconds or a second are interactive. And one thing I assume, we don't use any hardware accelerated ray tracing. Some of you might have heard that. This is just due to the nature that there is some vendor restrictions which we can't pull through because we are not using CUDA or something. We are directly emitting some of the internal IR, like intermediate representation stuff. And if you don't use the optics library, for example, that's here, specific example, you can't use hardware accelerated ray tracing. So, with that,
This looks a bit different.
Okay. So, as I mentioned, this project was funded by the Ulrich Stiftung. Thanks to them. And thanks to you for listening to this. And if there are any questions, feel free to ask. And one particular thing, especially about this parameter thing, are there any feedbacks? Because I hope it's a good choice, but we still have to try it out more about that.